You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 16th of August 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com, because we have with us tonight the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, producer extraordinaire, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis,
good evening, Sven.
How are you doing?
I'm doing as well as can be expected. Been in a bunker quite a while now.
Continually in that bunker. How's the response been to episode 20?
I think a lot of people have seen exactly what I've been trying to say all along. It does explain a lot of things happening today, especially the Libyan part. These wars and revolutions started with the French have been perpetrated by the same people and constantly victorious.
Yeah, it's good to remind people of what happened in Libya. I mean, a lot of the time we talk a lot about white nationalists and white heroes, and you know, you've got to hand it to Gaddafi. I mean, he was a really good nationalist for his people, and you know, he met a terrible, grisly fate. He was like the Hitler of Africa, I would suggest.
He died like the Mussolini of Italy.
Yeah. I saw a comment, I think I saw earlier, something about these black soldiers that he had, these Negro soldiers that got massacred. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, apparently the rebels took the blacks over there as... there was this kind of rumour once that Gaddafi was bringing in these black soldiers, you know, to prop up his regime, which wasn't the case, but it was taken on board by the rebels that every black then was either a supporter of Gaddafi and or a soldier of Gaddafi, and consequently he massacred millions or thousands, hundreds of thousands.
And also, when we look at Africa, we tend to think of Negroes, but it's not all Negroes. You've got Arabs there, you've got Berbers there as well, and in Libya itself, it's mainly a sort of Arab country. And I think, in a way, some of the Arabs weren't very happy with Gaddafi liking the Negroes so much. I mean, he really did look out for their interests, and he was trying to bring them in from Chad to work there, and he was looking into the welfare of the Negroes in Europe. And I think some of the Arabs weren't that happy with it. I mean, even if you're mixing African Arabs and African Negroes in one place, you're still going to get massacres. You know, if you mix two different ethnicities together, you're just asking for trouble, even with the greatest of leaders, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Gaddafi, he always felt that his regime was a safeguard for the race mixing of Europe, to be honest. But yeah, Libya was kind of a mixed hot posh, I suppose, of different nationalities. But like I said, he did some wonderful things for his country. And the fact that, you know, electricity was free would stun people in Britain.
And the water as well. I think that man-made water project that he had underneath the desert there, making the desert bloom. You know, he did a lot of great things, and he was a proud nationalist as well. I can remember reading in his Green Book, and he said something about, you know, you can't have a state that's just built around shared ideology. You can't have a state that's built around a piece of paper. It needs to be built around the nation, and the nation are those who are basically related by blood. And he was a proper ethno-nationalist. So, of course, that makes him an enemy of the state. Well, before we get into a conversation today...
Can I just say one last thing? The one striking thing that did hit me was how similar the banks reacted as it did to Hitler. And all the nations that supported Hitler and all the bank accounts frozen, and Roosevelt obviously classed them as aggressor nations, and so too did Libya. Libya had all their assets frozen outside of Libya, in all the banks. Consequently, you know, that money, $500 billion, was put towards bringing the country down. But very similar to what happened with Europe with Roosevelt.
Well, that was the main thing. I think that tipped people off, wasn't it? As soon as as soon as the rebels had got in there and they'd taken Benghazi, they put up a central bank. I can remember seeing it on the news. A central bank has been opened in Benghazi by the rebels. And I thought, whoa, what has that got to do with any of it? What has a central bank got to do with it? Everything to do with it. Well, yeah. Before we really get into the subject matter today, I just wanted to bring up Dr. E. Michael Jones, who I'm a big fan of. I know you're a big fan of his as well, Dennis. His YouTube channel, he's been banned from YouTube, which is a really despicable thing to do to an elderly man. I think he's 72 years old. He's a professor. He's an academic, and he's just starting to have the sort of success that he deserves for decades of research into the degeneration of our society. And now that he's starting to have some success and he's getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of views on his videos, I don't know how many subscribers he's got, must be getting on near 100,000, maybe more than that. And they just banned him. They've given him a strike and they've removed all of his videos, all of them. You can see that they were there once. And if he gets a third one, then it will be permanent. And I think it's his 50th wedding anniversary this month. I saw this video he did. This is an emergency broadcast just to let all the viewers know that they can still find our content at culturewars.com, although not all of it, because they haven't got all of it there. And, you know, I just looked at him and I just thought, what a horrible thing to do to a man of his age, to cut him off from all the people that he was interacting with. You know, you got 100,000 people there that were contacting him through that channel, and they've just cut him off from that. Horrible thing to do.
I think that was the problem. I mean, I actually went on this week. I hadn't seen any of his videos lately, so I went on particularly to see if his channel was still on, and it was, which in a way surprised me, because for the last few videos that I've watched of his, he really has took on this anti-Semitism head on with the Jews and spoke directly to Jews via Skype on video with a lot to do with it. And he was of the opinion, and I can understand where he was coming from, that this encroachment on free speech cannot be allowed, especially in America with all the rights, etc. But I've said for a long time that the blueprint to all of this is the Soviet Union, the taking down of that country. And if you look with anti-Semitism, a new law has just come out in Florida, which threatens you with imprisonment if you say anything about a world dominated by Jews, or they're proposing to dominate the world. So that's coming in Florida, and that will spread to other states. But the overriding thing is that when E. Michael Jones was saying anti-Semitism cannot be allowed, freedom of speech cannot be encroached upon, he really missed the boat with Stalin, because when Stalin brought the anti-Semitism laws out in the Soviet Union, the penalty was death. And that would not surprise me if at some stage, to bring in the New World Order to stop the criticism of Jews or the criticism of Israel, to bring in the death sentence for anti-Semitism. It shouldn't be a surprise, because it was used in the taking down of the Soviet Union.
Well, Trump's already hinted at it, hasn't he? If people go out,
has he really?
If people go out shooting others, and they are found to be haters, racists, or anti-Semites, he wants a death sentence for them. He said, if it's people that are involved in hate speaking, or whatever the term is, hate speech, then they should be executed. So Trump, that's the sort of way that they would bring it in. I don't think they would be open about it and say,
no,
just criticism.
It's always backdoor.
And we'll execute. It will be like a violent act and also anti-Semitism. But he talks about it from an academic point of view. And his argument is, well, I'm a Catholic Christian. I'm a traditional Christian. And all I am doing is, you know, what the Bible says. And he will say, well, was St. Paul an anti-Semite then? Mm-hmm. Was Jesus an anti-Semite? And of course they were all anti-Semites by the Jews' description of an anti-Semite, but he doesn't see it that way. And he says, so how can I be anti-Semitic? So yeah, he is missing a bit there, but just from the human side of it, you know, I just think it's such a despicable thing to do to an old man. of all people, to take his YouTube channel away. Because if you just look at it like that, that's what he is. He's an elderly man with all this contact. You know, he does amazingly well to do what he does on the internet at his age. Absolutely incredible. And to just kick him in the nuts like they have like that, sick.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit like the Holocaust thing where they'll drag into court a 90-odd-year-old ex-SS. I think their standard, the way they look at it, of when they prosecute people, or in Michael Jones' case, take him off YouTube, is if he's capable of firing a bullet, then he's capable of being taken to court or his YouTube channel is down. So no matter how old you are, if you can fire that bullet at them, they will do it.
Yeah, if you criticize them, they're coming for
exactly.
you. If you want to know who it is that rules you, look for who it is you can't criticize. Right, well, we've got a couple of things to get into today. First off, we've got a comment, and then second off, we're going to debunk a video. A comment was left for you, Dennis, from someone called National Socialist Truther, and I noticed that you left a really lengthy answer to this one.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, you did. National Socialist Truther says, speaking of the Treaty of Versailles, what do you think of the arguments that Germany had no right to complain about being treated unfairly in the Treaty of Versailles because Germany imposed harsh terms on Russia in the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk? And also this one, Germany planned to impose harsher terms on the Entente Powers allies if it had victory in World War I, so the way Germany was treated in the Treaty of Versailles was justified. So what do you make of that?
Yeah. And I went on to explain because what we're thinking was coming from what I read just a few weeks ago in a forum where people made light of the Treaty of Versailles. They didn't seem to think it harmed the Germans. And when you look on the surface, it probably doesn't. But what the Treaty of Versailles actually was a death sentence, and the Germans knew it. And the Germans had to be forced, nearly 1 million, 900,000 were starved to death before they'd even come to the table to sign it. I think originally the guy who was going to sign it originally saw the terms and walked out. It had nothing to do with it. So they had to starve him to the table to sign it, for one. And what it actually was the way to kill Germany. And the way they planned on doing it was to split up the country, dissect it in certain areas, and in other areas they would put foreign troops. And so the Germans had to go into, say, the Saar region with, you know, as if it was another country. They had to be checked, passports, etc., searched. And all this was a kind of veneer to the real target of destroying Germany completely. And that fell in line with what I was doing in the final episode with the Dawes plan and the Young plan and why the bankers continuously sent this money to Germany, even though they were receiving no payments of loans. Because eventually they would have gone into Germany, they would have broken up, they would have sold it off, and the world would have thought they were right, because, hey, Germany's in debt, they should be able to pay the debts. If they can't, Bayliss moves in and sells all your goods. Well, this is exactly what the Treaty of Versailles was doing, but in a different type of way, where they dissected the country, put X amount of millions into Poland, X amount into Czechoslovakia, and, you know, eventually they would become Polish and they would become Czechoslovakian and lose that Germanic part of the culture. Even cutting them off to the extent where they couldn't even get in contact. I mean, it was forever trying to get a railroad through to, you know, to Danzig, but Poles always refused. So basically, when you look at just that, there's no harsh treatment of any Russian treaty at all. But when you go into after World War II, what happened to them, and the 15 million which were kicked out of their homes and left to wander a country with no food, and then you look at the Rhinestone Valley and the stripping of all rights of all Germans of any prisoner of war stances, and the millions that died there, you know, it couldn't possibly compare what the Germans were going to do to what has happened at the end of both them wars. And he kindly said, fair enough.
Yeah, it just doesn't compare, does it? I mean, what would Germany have done with Russia? What were they saying? Oh, we could do with a bit of land to develop. And of course, the developing would be of benefit to you as well as of benefit to us. And everybody else has got colonies.
I didn't mention what went on today either. So, I did in the reply, and that was the influx of millions of Africans.
Our plan right from the start was to destroy Germany. It just doesn't compare. Well, this other comment actually comes from somebody called Slaptrap. And they said, hey, could you maybe debunk this video in the future? It seems you had a comment on it, but since your channel is gone on YouTube, the comment is now gone as well. And it's quite a good video to debunk. It's a short 5-minute video, and the guy actually packs in loads and loads of information. It goes very fast. It's called Hitler's False Christianity, and the channel is Fatima Sacrifice. Have you heard of this channel before, Dennis, or the people behind this?
No, but there's a couple of similar channels. These are people who have a certain outlook on the Catholic preachings, which has been mistaken by a lot of people when Hitler went against it. They took that as Hitler was being a pagan, where in reality all Hitler was doing was taking the Jewishness, which had been put into the Bible, out and to make it Aryan Christian, which he believed it truly was.
Well, they seem to be some type of traditionalist Christian, I think, because they're quite hard line. I mean, in part of it, they're saying, there should be no peace made with Protestants at all, which is, that's hard line traditional Catholic thinking. Yet they seem to have fallen for a lot of black propaganda, a lot of things that have been taken out of context. So I'm in two minds whether they're deliberately doing it or whether they're just... they're just deceived, but we can go through it anyway. And what I did, I wrote down the quotes that they were using. So say, because it goes very, very fast, and there's a lot of text on the screen that you have to pause. I mean, it's probably more like a 15-minute long video that they've condensed into 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it seems that most of the information that they're getting comes from a book called The Persecution of the Catholic Church in the Third Reich, which is a collection of anonymous sources mainly, although it does have other quotes in it as well. And of course, with anonymous sources, you can't actually check them. It was produced in 1941, so it was produced, after what time? When did the war start exactly? It was before 1941, wasn't it? It was near the end.
39. If you call the Declaration on Germany.
There you go. So the war had started. So the world had already turned against Germany. And the Catholic Church really couldn't be seen to be standing up for Germany anymore. In fact, the Pope was encouraged to write that bull condemning National Socialism, which really didn't help them very much. But as you've shown before, there was really a split in the church. There was the traditionalists in the church and there was the progressives in the church. And the progressives were supportive of Hitler and Hitler was supportive of them. And the progressives, he was against, and the progressives were against him, and the progressives slowly took over the church at the end of the war, basically. And I think this guy is missing that. The first quote that he has is from Pope Pius XI, March the 14th, 1937. Now, was this the Pope that did the Concordat? I think it was, wasn't it?
No, I think it was the Pope before him.
Right, okay. Well, maybe it was the guy that organised the Concordat that became Pope?
Well, the guy who organized the Concordat and became Pope, that was on the eve of World War II, I believe.
Right, okay. This is Pope Pius XI, so it may have been then, or it may not have been. And he says, whoever exalts race or the people or the state to an idolatrous level is far from the truth of God. Okay, fair enough. Any idolatry is idolatry. And, you shouldn't be worshipping false gods. But the National Socialists weren't doing that. The race and the nation are both creations of God. Yeah, they're both created by God, obviously. And preserving them is preserving his handiwork. Preventing their destruction is preventing the destruction of God's handiwork. God created the nations. God created everything in its kind. Kind after kind is the first law, basically the law of nature, that it repeats over and over again in that first chapter of Genesis. And protecting that is protecting God's handiwork. That's doing the Lord's work.
Essential to it, yeah.
Essential. And that's what the National Socialists were doing. They were protecting the race from any more degeneration and trying to improve it and stop this degeneration and stop the race mixing. And the race mixing destroys the nation. It destroys the race. It destroys God's handiwork. And it can only be of Satan. You know, that's what I would answer to that. They weren't worshipping. Yeah. They weren't worshipping man or worshipping Germans for being Germans. They were worshiping God. They were a Christian nation, and they were trying to preserve nature in the same way today that we try to preserve these species that are going extinct. We try and preserve what's left of the red squirrel over here in Britain, and yet nobody makes the connection between that and the endangered white man that's being swamped by foreigners. So that's what I would say to question that first quote. And the second quote is Pope St. Pius X from October the 4th, 1903. And this quote says, "The distinguishing mark of Antichrist, man has with infinite temerity put himself in the place of God." And obviously what the author of the video is doing there, he's trying to imply that Hitler was putting himself in the place of God. I don't see how he can say that. And how he can link Hitler with Antichrist. I mean, it tells us in the Bible exactly who the Antichrist is. And it says, he who denies Christ is Antichrist. And who was it that was denying Christ at the time that was written and is still denying Christ today?
Always have done. Yeah.
Always have done. The Jews. That's who Antichrist is. The Jews. And that was who Hitler was against.
Yeah.
So he's mixed it up here, isn't he?
Well, totally. I mean, the central essence of Christianity is Jesus Christ, and Hitler always spoke highly of Christ, not always in the same sense as what a Jewish version of the Vatican would say, but nonetheless Jesus Christ was his Lord and Savior.
This is the point, really. I mean, what the National Socialists were against was the Judaizing of Christianity. And that's what they were trying to stop. And the progressives in the church were saying, oh, no, that's not Judaizing of Christianity. That's actual Christianity that the National Socialists are trying to stop. And that's where the confusion is. And we'll see later on.
That's right.
And you can even see it in the video that is actually what the National Socialists were trying to get rid of. They weren't trying to get rid of Christianity. They're trying to get rid of the Jewish part of it. And Judaizing itself is a heresy that goes right back to the first century, and it's even mentioned in the New Testament. So they were carrying on the fighting against this heresy of Judaizing Christianity, which is obviously a Christian thing to do. And it's something the pagans do today.
Judaizing. Well, I heard a speech, well, not so much a speech, it was more an interview of a priest who was talking against Freemasonry, but that priest also talks against Hitler. And I can't see the angle it's coming from, only that the fact is we live in a world today where the Vatican is dominated by Freemasonry and the world is dominated by Jews. And so if he says anything to the liking of history of Hitler, then, you know, he's gained nothing and lost everything. But that, you know, you've got to think around these things when these people talk.
Yeah, so many people will only talk so much about the truth, and as far as Adolf Hitler goes, they won't go near it.
They won't
cover that up, and they're missing the final piece of the jigsaw. Well, unsurprisingly, a large part of the criticism centres around Alfred Rosenberg, and we've done a podcast on Alfred Rosenberg before in the past, so I don't really want to repeat the material we did there. Which I don't think we will do, actually. But the first bit that he says about Alfred Rosenberg, he comes out with a quote from The Myth of the 20th Century. And The Myth of the 20th Century is the book that Alfred Rosenberg wrote. It wasn't an official National Socialist book. I've read it a couple of times. I think it's a very interesting book. The general drift of it is basically that religion itself has become corrupted by Jewish ideas, and we need to remove the Jewish ideas from our religion, and we need a new myth for the 20th century to coalesce around, a new myth to inspire the race that does not have this Jewish influence in it. And that's basically trying to explain it in a nutshell, and it's a very complicated book. But straight off, he comes out with a quote from it, And he takes it out of context and he misrepresents what it's actually saying. And his quote is, and this is from Alfred Rosenberg, "The dynamic German nature expresses itself in the Luciferian empirical." So, of course, the what he's trying to imply is that Alfred Rosenberg was a Luciferian, which he clearly isn't. Now, I looked the full quote up, and the full quote says, "The dynamic German nature never expresses itself in flight from the world, but in overcoming it, in struggle with it. This occurs in a twofold manner, in the godly, religious, artistic, metaphysical, and in the Luciferian, empirical." So it's saying on the spiritual side, it's godly and religious, and on the earthly side, it's Luciferian and conquering. And that's basically talking about the duality that there is within life. It's not saying that he's a Luciferian. He's talking about harnessing the power of the earth and science, which he sees as being Luciferian because it's worldly. And whereas the spiritual endeavors he would see as godly or Christly, because he certainly wasn't actually against Christ, and he saw Christ as Arian. And the next quote, he says, "It is easy to understand that the Luciferian conquest of the world can easily become satanic." So what it's making clear there is that he doesn't see this Luciferian word that he's using. He doesn't see that as satanic. He sees when it becomes evil as being satanic. So really that quote
which sort of disproves him.
And then he calls Rosenberg a Satanist who Hitler put in charge of ideology. And, you know, there's another quote from Rosenberg that I found, and this is what he says. He says, "Jesus is a linchpin of our history, the God of the Europeans." So a Satanist wouldn't be saying that. And he wasn't. I'm not sure he was in charge of ideology. I was looking up the things today, and I should have looked that up again. I think he was in charge of education or something like that, or making certain that there was no damaging stuff like communist stuff or pornography that was going to be available to the public. That sort of thing he was responsible for. He wasn't responsible for formulating the ideology of National Socialism, which is what they're implying here. They say he was a head of a district training department, said, and this is from the book, this is one of these anonymous people that give these quotes, a head of a district training department said, "National Socialism is an ideology, and that ideology is to be found in Rosenberg's myth of the 20th century. This is the official attitude of the party and the Führer. It is quite clear that Hitler stood behind Rosenberg as he entrusted to him the ideological training of the party." Now, that's nonsense, and I've got some quotes.
That's a big statement, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got some quotes later on that we can get into, but just to say here, the National Socialist ideology is to be found in Mein Kampf. It's not to be found in Rosenberg's myth. I mean, when did Rosenberg write his myth? Something like 1941, 1942?
Well, I can remember Hitler putting the Vatican at ease by saying that this was just an individual's perception of things. It's nothing to do with National Socialism.
Hitler didn't really like it that much, and he didn't really want it that associated with National Socialism. It certainly wasn't put out as a
official
National Socialist book. It was put out under private publishing. To say that the ideology is found in that's to distract people from reading Mein Kampf and to distract people from looking at the 25 points plan, which are both explicitly Christian. The 25 point plan says that all the National Socialist ideology is rooted in Christianity and the version of Christianity that is positive Christianity. And it explains that. So, and it doesn't make any mention of Rosenberg or following anything that he says, because the National Socialist ideology was hit upon decades before this book actually came out. And also he mocked Rosenberg's book. As I say, I've got a quote later on that explains that. Yeah. And then it says Hitler praised Martin Luther. We'll accept that. He did praise Martin Luther, and he saw Martin Luther as a nationalist fighting against corrupt popes and a corrupt church and fighting against the Jews. He didn't support Martin Luther because he thought Martin Luther was going to destroy Christianity or he was a Satanist. They saw him as a German nationalist mainly because he fought against the Jews because of that book on the Jews and their lives.
That only came out at the end because that's a thing early on in the series. The Jews actually said that he was working for them and being financed by them. And it was only when he finally read the Talmud that he were more vicious than anybody turning on the Jews.
Yeah, he was used by them. And obviously, the National Socialists are looking back 400 years later, so they see the whole of his life and see that he wrote on the Jews and their lies. And this narrator, though, he then uses quotes from Table Talk about it, not a very reputable source. And the quote
not a
is,
source at all in my eyes.
Yeah, and the quote is, but Luther had the merit of rising against the Pope and the organization of the church. And again, I can't really argue against that because that does seem to me like something like Hitler would say, because they were against the organization of the church, the clericalism, not the church itself, not Christianity, but against the clericalism that was in the church and the corruption and subversion of that by Jews.
And which he found at the heart of in the Centre Party and their fight against him coming to power.
And that's why they got rid of the Centre Party.
Exactly.
with the church's blessing, because that was part of the corrupt organisation of it. And then there's another deceitful bit, and there's a quote, he talks about political faith and talks about Hitler talking about political faith, and the narrator pretends that this really means religious faith and that it actually means positive Christianity, which it isn't when you think about it. Faith is a conviction that a promise will be kept, and positive Christianity was about removing Jews from Christianity, eliminating the heresy of Judaizing from the church. So that's nothing to do with political faith. What political faith is a belief in the current political situation, a belief in your politicians, a belief in the political system. That's a political faith. And that's what Hitler was talking about. He wasn't saying that that National Socialism was going to replace the religious faith of Christianity. And I think that's a willful deceit there when he brings up this political faith. And people that don't really understand what the word faith means, they might fall for that and think that was actually what he was talking about. But Jews,
people don't research. That's a problem. They'll just take this at face value.
I'll say the Jews play into that. They say that faith is a belief in something that there's no evidence for. And that's not really it, because faith is when you have a conviction that a promise is going to be kept. And that conviction will be based upon logic. And it will be based upon reason. Like if you're trusting somebody that they're going to keep a promise, that will be based on whether they kept their promises before and whether they're a trustworthy person and whether they keep their word. But it's not a blind faith. So political faith, it's about politics. There's no reason to believe that is going to have any religious connotations whatsoever. But because faith mainly gets used today to do with religion, this narrator tries to pretend that's what's being talked about.
He's kind of coming from the same angle as what the pagans are coming from. The pagans will say that Christianity is a Jewish religion. It's made the German people weak. We don't want any more of it. We're going to go back to our old gods. Which is half true in a sense, where Hitler is saying Christianity has been Judaized. We're going to take that out of Christianity, bring it back to what we believe it really was. But that's not paganism. As I said, he was still looking at Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior, and he was still a believer of God. In fact, he felt that God had sent him there to promote this fight against the Jews.
It's interesting that this is the sort of stuff that the pagans go along with. I found them repeating the sort of stuff that you read on the fundamentalist or that you see on the fundamentalist YouTube channels, the really way out stuff that's, attacking Hitler and saying that he was, the Mein Kampf was going to be there on the altars and the children were all going to be saying prayers to Adolf Hitler and he was the Messiah. And they're thinking this is great. And, you try and explain to them, this is black propaganda. This was put out to make people hate Hitler. And you're thinking it's wonderful because you're so uneducated, basically, because white people have fallen so far from where we once were that we fall for this sort of nonsense.
There's also someone had a go at me again with this Hitler paganism thing, like, but you could tell how he was actually, or she was actually writing. The fact that the seeds of all this came not from facts, but from the hatred of Christianity that they have for it. It really was that obvious.
The next quote is from Pope Pius XI again, and he says, in the name of so-called positive Christianity, efforts are being made to de-Christianize Germany and lead her back to barbarous paganism. Close quote. And that's the sort of thing the pagans will leap on. And they'll believe that. When that's black propaganda. Positive Christianity was nothing to do with paganism. I mean, there was books written about it, and it was based on de-Judaizing Germany. That's what they were doing, de-Judaizing Germany. And the progressives in the church didn't like that, just the same as today. They love their Jews today. Well, they did back then as well, and didn't like...
Well, the thing is, I'm going to tell you this story, is that there was a pagan who frequently visited the channel when I was on YouTube. And I would let him have his say, and I would debunk it, but, you know, I didn't exactly ban him. And he'd come back every now and again after a video had been completed and say his piece. And he got to a point where I actually had Adolf Hitler saying in the series, he will defend Christianity, not just in words, but in actions. And he's mentioned this in a couple of speeches, you know, there's quotes from it. So it got to a point where I said to this pagan, look, it's getting to a point now, do you believe Hitler was a liar? And he said, yeah. So I said, well, that's about it now. Now you are banned.
Well, that is what they're making it out, isn't it? They're saying Hitler was just lying to everybody. But the church itself, the church was embarrassed about the way it had treated the Jews in the past. Don't forget, most of the laws that the National Socialists enacted against Jews actually came originally from the Catholic Church, putting them in ghettos, making them wear that Jewish star, making them wear clothing, banning them from marrying Christians. All of that was church laws. And the church wanted to distance itself from that. So when the National Socialists started doing all this again, they said, oh no, that's, they're persecuting Christianity. They're going against Christianity. They're de-Christianizing Germany. That's what he's referring to. Is the treatment of the Jews, and from, you know, when they, as we've said before, when they talk about the persecution of the Catholics, putting them in camps, that there were communists that happened to be Catholic and happened to be Catholic priests. Don't forget all the attacks that the progressive part of the Catholic Church led against the National Socialists in the last 2 years before they got elected, where they were refusing them absolution of their sins and refusing to allow them to be buried in hallowed ground. And you had a large contingent of progressive Catholics and progressive Protestants, but mainly progressive Catholics that did have to be dealt with. Nothing to do with going back to paganism, though. That's
no, just... well, it's similar to the like Mosley over here and the people who didn't want to war with Germany. You know, they were put in prison. He spoke up against the state.
And he continues, Catholics were being persecuted for their love of Christ by persons who represented themselves as being adherents of positive Christianity. Well, both of those things can't be true. If it was by an adherent of positive Christianity, then there's no way that the persecution was for their love of Christ. It was for their love of Jews. That's the point. Catholics that were hiding Jews were probably being reported by the adherents of positive Christianity. And that's not being persecuted for their love of Christ. That's because they're refusing to let go of their Judaizing heresy. They say, people who suggested that the church was oppressed in Germany would be rewarded with a sentence of imprisonment. Again, that's sedition, isn't it? If you've got the rest of the world that are coming out with these lies, and then you've got people within Germany that are aiding and abetting the enemy by encouraging these lies, then, you know, they should be sentenced to imprisonment, because that's treason, isn't it? That's going on there.
I mean, the whole world was against Hitler at the end, and that makes it look like Hitler was in the wrong to a lot of people. But in actual fact, there's cases where America put pressure on countries to actually declare war. They didn't exactly send troops, but they declared war One of them was Argentina. And they threatened Argentina, if you don't sign this and declare war on Germany, we will arm Brazil. At that time, there was some antagonism going on between the two. And then Argentina declares war on Germany, but in a matter of months, if not less, you know, they were taking National Socialists by the thousands. So there is this, you know, squeeze put on countries around the world to make it look that the Allies were the good guys and in the right. And John Amery, for instance, who actually left this country to join the Germans in the fight for Christianity. A video recently when I put up and was taken down off YouTube when the channel came down was when he turned around and said that the Allies were the traitors to mankind and to Christianity. And his father was in Churchill's cabinet. So he would have been, you know, more in line with this than anybody, which is why, of course, he didn't want to fight for Stalin and left, you know, to fight with Hitler.
Well, they understood the power of propaganda as well. If you got people that are reporting to the Allied newspapers that the church are being oppressed, you know, that's going to cause problems. It's like when that order was given out that nobody is to, anybody that keeps talking about gas chambers when there aren't any is to be punished for that.
Yeah.
Because it's spreading these malicious rumors, basically. Well, next bit, it talks about a first state prize for art and science that's been awarded to Rosenberg. Now, it's a prize for art and science, first off. It's not a prize for ideology. And apparently the document accompanying it says that Rosenberg has, in a scientific and penetrating manner, laid the firm foundation for an understanding of the ideological basis of National Socialism. Now, I would suggest, I haven't actually seen that document, but I would suggest that that would a document that had probably accompanied all of these prizes. And what it was saying, that whatever grade that he has managed to get to, it's just saying that he has, in a scientific and penetrating manner, laid the firm foundation for an understanding of the ideological basis of NS. That's not what the prize was given him for. That's just saying that he understands the ideological basis of NS. It's not saying he dreamt them up. He thought them up. He wrote them down for everyone else to read. It's saying that he understands the ideological basis of NS, and it was nothing to do with the prize that was given him, because that was for art and science. And yet they say this can only mean that Rosenberg's book was regarded in the highest quarters as one whose works expound the ideology of National Socialism and were not merely his own private speculations. So they disprove that themselves, but I've got these quotes here that I wanted to read.
Sure.
About his book. Let me see if I've got them here. And this is from The Holy Reich, Nazi Conceptions of Christianity, 1919 to 1945 by Richard Steigman Gull, which we've used quite a few times on here, and I do recommend it. And this is entitled The Myth of Rosenberg. Perhaps the most prominent paganist in the Nazi Party was Alfred Rosenberg. More than any other National Socialist, Rosenberg had pretensions to becoming the movement's great intellect and official ideologue, but he failed in both efforts. Early scholars of Nazism, taking Rosenberg's self-promotion at face value, greatly overestimated the importance of his ideas for the movement as a whole. The sheer volume of published works and administrative paperwork produced by Rosenberg and his offices lent weight to this impression. Karl Brascher came somewhat close to gauging Rosenberg's true influence when he described him as the administrative clerk of National Socialist ideology. However, even in his role as protector of the Nazi worldview, scholars have shown that Rosenberg encountered resistance and ultimate defeat at the hands of rival offices within the Nazi Party and state. In spite of these findings, however, other scholars, especially those who espouse political religion theories of Nazism, still maintain that Rosenberg's ideas were hegemonic in the party. By far the most important of his books was The Myth of the 20th Century, published in 1930. Significantly, it was published as a private work, never becoming an official guide to Nazi thinking, as Mein Kampf was. It never received the official stamp of the NSDAP, nor did the party's official publisher publish it. Given the fate that awaited Dinter and Ludendorff when they tried to make their religious views official party doctrine, Hitler would not have countenanced its publication in any other way. Indeed, in the same book that put forth a new religious doctrine, Rosenberg felt compelled to assure his reader that he was not trying to resurrect a dead religion and that it should not be Nazi policy to engage in religious matters. Most of Rosenberg's opponents in the churches assumed that it was, nonetheless, the true guide to Nazi thinking. Some people even supposed it was more influential in the NSDAP than Hitler's own book. The party, in fact, largely ignored it, as Rosenberg himself would later discover. Over 700 pages long, it was easily the most abstruse book ever written by a Nazi. In keeping with their own religious views, party leaders like Hitler and Goebbels heaped enormous scorn upon it. According to one biographer, Hitler completely rejected the mysticism with which Rosenberg, in his main work, attempted to give a religious intensity to a racist interpretation of history. Goebbels was characteristically succinct, describing the book as an ideological belch. Although Hitler was known for tailoring his remarks to please his audience, even in Rosenberg's presence he was less than enthusiastic. Before publishing it, Rosenberg asked Hitler for his opinion of the book. 6 months after receiving the manuscript, Hitler had still not read it. Hitler coolly replied, "It is a very clever book, only I ask myself, who today is likely to read and understand such a book?" It was a reflection of the insecurity of Rosenberg's position that he replied by asking whether he should suppress it or even resign from his party office. Hitler supposedly said no to both, maintaining that Rosenberg had a right to publish his book as it was his intellectual property. However, on later occasions, Hitler would express regret that Rosenberg had written the book in the first place. According to Albert Speer, Hitler referred to it as "stuff nobody can understand," written by a narrow-minded Baltic German who thinks in horribly complicated terms, a relapse into medieval notions. On another occasion, Hitler made reference to its heretical outpourings. In rare moments, Rosenberg even admitted to himself that Hitler ultimately rejected his religion. Hitler set his face from the beginning against racial cultism. Although it is true that Rosenberg's mythos sold hundreds of thousands of copies, this figure is not a real reflection of its popularity. As another of Rosenberg's biographers points out, secondary schools and institutions of higher education were required to have copies in their libraries, but to what extent these were read cannot now be estimated. We can therefore safely discount Robert Poy's assertion that Rosenberg's view of religion was widely held by most committed National Socialists. And I think we can leave it there. I think that, you know, that explains it, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly didn't sell as many as Mein Kampf, did it?
No, well, this is the thing. He had a rather high opinion of himself. And a lot of stuff has been found of him explaining his high opinion of himself, but the truth of it is that he really wasn't that well thought of. And the book didn't go. Yeah, the book didn't go to the schools. It certainly wasn't the ideological basis of National Socialism. It was just his ideas, whether they're right or wrong.
We're always going to be jumped on.
And I mean, this guy that's making this video is trying to claim that it was regarded in the highest quarters as a book whose works expounded the ideology of NS. You know, it's just bunkum, really.
Yeah.
What is the next point here? Then he brings up the 25-point program, and he complains that Hitler doesn't show any bias between Catholic and Protestant, because in the 25-point program it says, we're not going to have any bias towards whatever confession. You can be a Christian, and it doesn't matter if you're Catholic or Protestant, is basically what it says. And so the guy that made the video is basically inferring that because Hitler didn't kick all the Protestants out, he must be a heretic. So this is what I'm saying. The guy's, you know, he sounds a traditionalist, but he's fallen for this black propaganda, basically. It'd be nice if we could...
Well, Hitler was always hoping that the Protestants would, you know, reinstate with Catholics. Anyway, that would have been the intention with positive Christianity, because he didn't want any splinter groups or splits. You know, he wanted that solid base of Christianity. And he always felt that, and even tried to talk to the Protestants at one point, but was getting nowhere. And then he just said, well, you know, it's not really my job anyway. And left it as it was. But his sole intention was always, you know, his wish was that they would, you know, all join together again.
He put a lot of work into that. That was a dream of his, really.
It really was.
Was stopping the animosity between the two factions of the church. Pope Eugene, we're next get a quote from him from 1441, where he's talking about excommunicating everyone that's outside the Catholic Church. So excommunicating all the Protestants. It's funny that this guy will bring out quotes like that.
Yeah.
He won't bring up the quotes where they expel the Jews and get the Jews to wear special clothes and put them in ghettos and can't marry Christians. He doesn't bring up any of that.
He won't mention Freemasonry either, which over the past, 60 years, the Catholic Church has totally ignored the traditional way of looking at Freemasonry, and now openly say that Catholics can join Freemasonry, and simply the reason being because Freemasonry's took over the Catholic Church. Yeah, he's not mentioning that.
Complete about turn. And next they say that they wanted to make National Socialism into a religion, and you'd get people today that try and claim that, nationalists that will try and claim that, even though, you know, everything you read that Hitler ever said, he was totally against that. I've just got one of his quotes here. He said, "National Socialism is not a religious reformation, but a political reorganization of our people." So he's quite explicit there. Not a religion, yeah. And he certainly didn't want to be seen as a religious figure, a messiah or anything like that. He was a messiah figure for the German people because he reinvigorated them, but not in any spiritual sense or religious sense, as in somebody that should be worshipped. He was just somebody that should be thanked.
Yeah, next, he kind of prayed for a messiah to deliver him from, you know, the pain and suffering that Germany had been going through since World War One. Even previously, and he did deliver. There's no doubt about it. He did deliver.
He was the answer to their prayers.
That's right.
Next, there's a bit where it talks about, and I've heard this before, about the crucifixes all being removed from the schools and replaced with pictures of Hitler. Now, I can't find that much information about that. Crucifixes get removed from schools today. They're supposed to be secular. You could get complaints about having them in schools today because it's not supposed to be overly biased towards any religion in particular. But one thing I could say about this is that would have been in state schools, and the Catholics had their own schools, the Protestants had their own schools, and the state schools had their own schools. Now, it could be that the Protestants didn't use crucifixes, and if they were putting crucifixes up in the state schools, that was seen as being Catholic and showing favour to the Catholics. So that is a reason why they may not have had crucifixes in there. But go on, Dennis.
Yeah, you see sometimes footballers coming onto a pitch and they'll give the sign of the cross, which immediately you know is a Catholic. But there was some conflict in Austria where Hitler closed Catholic schools. There was some reason which would have been to do with the left wing, I've got no doubt. And so that was then taken on board that he hated Catholicism. But, you know, this was in Austria, which was out of the control of Germany up till, you know, the Anschluss. So obviously there was some serious surgery needed to combat whatever went on before.
Oh, they definitely needed surgery, you call it that. Next, the next bit that I took from the video is it gives another quote from Rosenberg. And he says, "Negative and positive Christianity were locked in conflict from the beginning, and that conflict today is being waged with ever more bitterness." Now, I don't know what the author of the video thought that meant, but that's quite clear to me that he's talking about Judaizing. That was the heresy right from the beginning, was Judaizing. As I said, it's mentioned in the book of Acts, I think, and in Galatians, and that's always been the conflict between the traditionalists and the progressives, the Jew lovers, and the people that want to be apart from the Jews, basically, and don't want that in their religion. And that's all that he's talking about. So I don't know, you know, whether he thinks that Rosenberg was saying that, you know, positive Christianity was paganism. I don't see where he can get that logic from, because it's quite clear he's talking about Judaism there. And he's
when you look at Christ and you look at the way what Hitler was trying to do, you know, example, the hatred of usury, you know, they both saw this as, you know, anti-Christian. But this is never brought up on these websites. You know, we've now bowed to usury.
Well, that's a good example there, Dennis, I think, because usury is so associated with Jewry, isn't it? Totally associated with Judaism. So to be against usury was to be against Judaism. That was and to try and stop usury from being allowed, that's trying to stop Jewish ideas making their way into Christianity. That's positive Christianity. That's being against Judaizing. That's a good example.
And negative Christianity is not criticizing the church today for accepting it.
Going along with it. He's got another quote from Rosenberg. The negative type, and this is talking about church priests, emphasizes Levantine Etruscan tradition. And Levantine Etruscan means Jewish. The leaven is, you know, where the Jews come from. And in his book, he talks about these actual pagan ideas, these orgies and phallic symbols and all this sort of stuff that was in that was part of the Etruscan civilization before the Romans took it over. And again, that was Canaanite mixed race orgies, goddesses, and he's against that. And again, that's what a lot of the pagans today think is, you know, think that's great, following the goddess. But that's what Rosenberg is saying here needs kicking out of the church, Levantine Etruscan tradition. The author claims that magazines, books, etc., are attacking Christianity, and the actual image shown to illustrate this, on one side of it, it's got a Jew molesting a woman, while on the other side of it, it's got a pious priest and a nun that are shown as doing the complete opposite. The priest isn't molesting the nun; they're being pious and Christian. And on the other side, you've got the Jew with a rabbi's hat on, and he's molesting a woman. And yet, according to the author on the video, this is a cartoon that's attacking Christianity. And you know, this makes it clear that what was really being attacked was Judaism, and the Jew lovers in the church weren't happy about that, so they called it attacking Christianity. And you know, you couldn't get more obvious than that. Picture.
I mean, at the end of the day, you've got two types of websites. You've got some websites where they're saying Hitler's Christian and they will quote you and there'll be 100 quotes. And then you'll get the other type of website which will be saying he was pagan, anti-Christian, and they will dig up these quotes, like you said, mostly anonymous, mostly from table talks. And, you know, people will believe what they want to believe.
Well, that's why it's good that we debunk them like this. You know, it's good of people to send them in and say, will we debunk them? And then it's got it says about positive Christianity, this is another anonymous quote, it would have to prove its readiness to give absolute service and undivided allegiance to the great national community. Well, what's wrong with that?
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that. And then you've got Caius Fabricius, who is the author of the book on positive Christianity. And there's a quote from him, and it says, positive Christianity has grown and become as one with the spirit of the German nation throughout the history of the centuries. Again, what's wrong with that?
Well, to be honest, the underlying question to all of this is, why are they putting so much effort into saying he wasn't Christian? What reason have they got to be so intense to say that he wasn't Christian?
And so desperate, aren't they? You know, desperate to prove that. Putting these videos out. And finally, the final pictures on the video, it shows a black magic altar, and it claims that positive Christianity was simply paganism, and it calls Hitler satanic. Which, you know, I don't know where, black and white picture of a black magic altar with a pentagram, I don't know where that ever appeared.
I think it would be Freemasonry.
I know. All we can do is hope that, you know, the person that made that video, maybe they'll have a listen to this podcast and realise that, you know, they've been hoodwinked, really, and that they should investigate this a little bit more. But I do think it's good we debunk them, Dennis.
Well, nobody else seems to be doing it.
Yeah, so if people find stuff like that, then please do drop them in the comment section or drop in the chat room and let us know But that's about it for today, Dennis. Thank you very much for coming on.
Well, I hope we've enlightened some people again.
I'm sure we have. Very good. Yep. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do have a Bitcoin wallet and we do require donations to keep the website going. It's at the bottom of every article and in the sidebar at the site. And of course, we do hope you'll have a great weekend ahead of you.